This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
I should say hello to everybody and welcome to Ages and Icons. I'm Mike Crisilago.
And I'm Gina Bucci.
Gina's here as always. And we are live in studio with the one and only Ms. Mary Walsh. Mary, Yay. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Well, it's more like live to tape, Mary. Sorry.
Okay.
And I'm running everything. So I'll be on mic sporadically. I'll be running the camera. I'm running the recorder. But Mary's here and all's good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So this is the part where we awkwardly run down your resume. Of course, everybody knows you from CODCO, from This Hour is 22 Minutes. You're currently starring on CBC's Little Dog and so many other projects.
Hatching, Matching, and Dispatching, I always like to mention.
And
my favorite thing I've ever done.
And it's like so many people love that show.
And why can't it get back on the air? It's full of, you know, Mark McKinney and Johnny Harris and Sherry White and Adriana Maggs and Susan Kent. And my God, it's just chock-a-block full of great comedic talent and Joel Thomas Hines. But anyway, there you go.
I have to say, too, the first time I ever heard that title,
yeah.
And it was a slow burn as it occurred to me, like, oh, Hatching, Matching, and Dispatching, the ambulance service, the wedding service, the funeral service. Like,
yeah.
It makes sense. What a great concept for a show.
I think so, too. But I thought when I was a little girl and I went to visit my mom up in Conception Harbor, the Hickeys had an ambulance service, and they also had a wedding hall and a funeral parlor. But it said on the Hickeys ambulance service, Hatching, Matching, and Dispatching. And I thought it was like that insouciant kind of Newfoundland, like Newfoundlanders find comedy in all the darkest places, right? And that's what I went for. But it turns out Protestant clergy use that very much. They use that phrase. That's what they do. They hatch, match, and dispatch, right? Yeah. But I had never heard it before I saw it on the Hickey's ambulance.
Well, you're also here today.
That is me.
Is that you?
Yeah, should I turn that off?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about this, guys.
Yeah, okay.
I just forgot to turn it off.
Okay.
I forgot where I was.
If it's important, you should take it.
No, it's not important. What is going to be that important? I mean, I guess a call for my son or a call for my husband or the doctor, I guess. But other than that, really, what can't wait till you... I mean, actually, I find that people think that they... People feel in many ways that they are more entrapped with the... But I find I don't respond to the phone the way I used to when it was just the regular dial phone.
Right.
Because if you didn't get it, you didn't know who called. Whereas now, for Christ's sakes, I mean, they leave a message, it already comes up on your phone. You can call them back. It's easy peasy, right? So I find that I don't have that jump to it thing anymore at all.
It's true. You could call them back. You could text them back. You could Facebook Messenger. You could get
the
smoke signal if you want.
That's right.
Here. What was it like when you got the call that
Good segue.
That told you that you were getting the Earl Grey Award at the Canadian Screen Awards for lifetime achievement for your body of work.
Wow. I just was really... overwhelmed because it is such a great honor, and I hadn't expected there's in everybody's career, I guess, there are down times. You know, there are times when everybody wants you to come over and be in their movie, and there are times when people go, "Are you kidding me? Who wants to talk to me?" I just wasn't expecting, and I'm up for a Best Actress and Best Support too. And I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed with gratitude, and I was in no way expecting it. I thought I was going to go into my usual, of course they wouldn't nominate me. I thought I was going to have to go back to my old bitterness, but luckily I can just keep moving ahead in sunny days with the Prime Minister.
I mean, you're going to add this Earl Grey Award to a list of accolades, including a Governor General's Performing Arts Lifetime Achievement Award, an Order of Canada. I think somebody said 18 Geminis.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I mean, what does this particular award accolade mean for you?
Well, I suppose it's a It's a difficult job in many ways. I mean, I know there are more difficult jobs for sure, but it is a difficult job being a woman in comedy. And then to be an old woman in comedy, it's an almost impossible job. So to be recognized and lauded is so sweet, you know. And, you know, I have so many more things I want to do and so many projects in the works. And so it will help, you know. It will help me. It will help me personally, emotionally, to feel like I'm still part of and not, you know, done in. And also, it will just help open doors, I guess, for the for that 2 days that anybody remembers that you yeah you won, right?
I want to.
So I'm moving fast after Sunday. I've got a series of meetings set up for Monday and Tuesday.
You've got to pounce. It's your moment. I want to get to your new projects in a sec, but first, just because I mean, you've had such a long successful career, and I mean, people remember you, as we said off the top, from so many different aspects of your career. But when you look back on your work and different projects and different characters that you've played, what do you remember the most fondly?
Well, you know, I to me, always the Hatching, Matching, and Dispatching was so exquisite to me. For some unknown magical reason, we all really got along really well. We didn't really know each other that well, any of us, and it all gelled, you know, and we loved doing it. And that was so great. And then to get to do the movie 2 years ago, Christmas Fury, based on that, and for everybody to come back and for us all to be, you know, because it's not like we spend the time in between, like calling each other up and going, oh, my God, Mark, I love you some lot or anything, you know, but we still, it was just like riding a bike. It was just all back again.
Yeah.
So that was wonderful. And, you know, many times I, you know, of course, I just did another 22 minutes.
Right.
And the 22 minutes crowd, you know, it was my idea for the show 2,000 years ago, back before the Earth hardened. But of course, all those extraordinary people came on board, and all the production people and stuff like that. So I was there just 2 weeks ago. I ambushed Andrew Scheer as Mark, and Kathy and I did a walk in the park about dope. And it was so wonderful to be there with everyone. Like, it's such a great crew. And Mark McKinney said to me once, I was part of a company called Codco. Yeah. I guess I was about 20 when we started. And he was with Kids in the Hall, right? And he said when he left, when they broke up, he always thought, oh, that's the way it's going to be. Like, I will have that kind of magic with everyone, right?
Yeah.
That kind of shorthand, that kind of understanding. And the same with Codco, right? Like, you just, and you go out into the world and you realize, oh, no, that was a very special. But again, to have that very special thing again with Hatching, and then finally to come to that very special place with I was going to say Kids in the Hall. Kids in the Hall. I was a kid in the hall. Did you know that? No. With this hour. It's just been, I've been blessed, you know? Yeah.
It's, I mean, a lot of people will remember you planting a kiss on Stephen Harper's face as Marg. And I watched it again yesterday. I know you've done so many different ambushes, so many sketches. So I hate to reduce it to just asking about this one.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine in today's political climate somebody going up to a leader of a conservative party.
He wasn't the leader.
He wasn't
then,
a leader
you
at
see?
The time. Okay.
That's
so this is
why
the key.
I even got close to him, because you remember when he became the leader, and then when he became the prime minister, he wouldn't even let real journalists come out behind a yellow wall, because the conservatives aren't about, these new conservatives are not about comedy or fun or light. They're about dark and fear-mongering. And so, but of course he would do anything to be on the show at that point, because he wasn't even, it was the leadership convention when
right.
I got him.
Okay. Right.
And then, remember, Jerry Hall got arrested. She was a person who was on, she was a female comedian.
Yeah.
And she used to do the, a young woman who was really taken with people.
Yeah, she was flirting
and she
with
went
them.
To see she went to a scrum with Stephen Harper, and the RCMP arrested her.
Yeah.
Because she said, "Oh, you're so good looking. I love you. You're so hot." What? So, you know, that definitely that crowd is not. But of course, I just got Andrew Scheer as he was coming out of a CBC interview the other day. So you can sometimes get people, but when if he goes on, pray God, that that doesn't happen. But if he does, then I'll never be talking to him again. Not my choice.
Do politicians in general react to you differently now? Like, say, when you do that with an Andrew Scheer as compared to maybe 20 years ago, if you're doing it with Chrétien or whoever?
Well, you know, the liberals, they're more liberal. I mean, that's the name. And the conservatives, like, they're more conservative, you know. It's weird, but that's true. And so the liberals are more liberal about things. Like, they're more willing to take a chance on stuff and maybe end up looking like a fool. But usually they end up looking like really like hail fellow well met. Like, he's a guy I'd like to, you know, have a beer with or something, people think. If people drink beer anymore, I don't know. But the conservatives aren't interested in that kind of thing. So I would say I don't know. I know Mark Critch does. I haven't been in the ambushing business in a long time, but because there was no ambushing business after Jerry Hall got arrested that time. So now Mark talks to the prime minister, and then I don't think we've done an old-fashioned ambush because the times are different, aren't they? Yeah. And people, there was a lot of support online. But there were people who, you know, I don't know if you're allowed to say this, you know, a big, fat, ugly old whore. That was some of the nicer remarks and about me.
Against people were saying that about you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just for ambushing, you know, like, I don't know where the whore comes into it. I never did anything with him. It's not like I kissed him. So there is a lot of vitriol out there that perhaps wasn't there 20 years ago, you know, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that, but that's my feeling, you know. And I think we have to be brave in the face of that and not mind. Like, because people were probably thinking that. They just didn't have any place to put it before, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. The Canadian Screen Awards, you've got your Earl Grey Lifetime Achievement Award. We know you're getting that.
That's right. I'm coming home
with that
anyway.
That, for sure. You're coming home with hardware.
Yeah.
But you're also, as you mentioned, up for two other awards, Best Lead Actress in a Drama Program or a Limited Series for Christmas Fury. And Best Supporting or Guest Actress in a Comedy for playing Tucker on Little Dog on CBC.
Yeah.
So this is a really interesting thing because I read a recent interview that you had done and you said television and film are now all about beautiful young people and the subject matters include heartbreak and romance. You don't see old women. They disappeared off the face of the earth. So I'm wondering if when you receive award nominations like this, if that serves as any sort of vindication for you to say, no, I'm not letting us disappear.
I think things are changing.
Yeah.
I mean, when Glenn Close spoke at the Golden Globes, I was never a fan of Glenn Close. I found her so cold and everything. But she spoke so humanly about her mother and that when her mother was 86 and her mother had spent her life bringing up Glenn and all that and supporting the father through his job, she turned to Glenn Close and said, I feel like I've never done anything in my life, right? Because she hadn't had whatever personal satisfaction she was looking for. So I think that things are different because we are the boomers to a certain extent. So it's boomer 3.0 now, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe when we failed at changing the world back in the 60s, late 70s really it was, wasn't it? The 60s didn't really happen until the 70s. Maybe now, you know, we can get out there and actually bring about that new Jerusalem, that shining city on the hill that we dreamt about then because we don't have anything to lose anymore. What are they going to do? Kill us? Well, we're on our way out anyway. And so I feel like Gloria Steinem says that old women become more radical because they lose power because they are no longer the object of anybody's desire. And old men get more conservative because they have power, which is easy enough to see when you see those old bags of rancid sin down in the American Senate, right? I mean, I'm honest to God, if you added their numbers, you probably couldn't even add them up how old they are. But women don't get to be that old and doing anything.
It's a crypt.
It's true.
What?
It's a crypt down there.
Yeah, it's a crypt. I know. It's like, oh my God, it's the Crypt Keeper. I hate that movie. So, you know, I'm pretty chuffed about the way things are. I still think that, you know, like when Frankie and Grace came on, Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
Well, I said to my, somebody was helping me out then, she was only 22, and I said, I don't really like it. The comedy's sort of soft, you know what I mean? And she said, I love it. I have never seen two old women talking to each other together on TV ever before. And I realized what an extraordinarily revolutionary thing it was, right? Yeah. And I love it now, too. But first, I just thought that they could have gone harder at the comedy. But, you know, it's great. But, yeah, that's right. Like, somebody like my friend Jamie, who's only 22, she would never have seen that in her whole life, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And you had this great quote as well about wrinkled radicals.
Yes.
I love that. Wrinkled radicals.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So at 66, how have you become more radical over the years?
Well, here's the thing. When you stop being the object or stop wanting to be the object of somebody else's desire, you start being allowed to be the subject of your own life. So I feel much better inside myself. You know, even when things go wrong outside, and many, many things do, of course, because I'm alive in the world and that's what the world's like, I still have a kind of center that I manage to, that you get as you get older. And it's such a gift because, like my friend Tommy Sexton, he didn't get to get older. Yeah. And I think, what a sin, because it just is so sweet to be at that place. Like they say that there's a U-bend in human happiness towards a much happier old age, and that is whatever your physical ailments are, whatever your monetary situation is, that it is a part of life, just like adolescence. Like most of us go through that terrible adolescence.
Right.
Most of us will go through a happier old age.
What
good news? Come on.
Yeah, I saw you mentioned the grayer the world gets, the brighter it becomes.
Yeah.
At your talk last year.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting you say that because, yeah, I think a lot of people, when they think of old age or older age,
yes,
they think of all the physical things and bodies breaking down. So, I mean, why is it just because, as you said, we're dropping those social expectations and just becoming
ourselves?
Nobody
can give a good explanation for it. Nobody really knows exactly why it is. Like, nobody can really understand adolescence. Like, why do we have to suffer so much in adolescence? I know we're hormonally imbalanced and stuff like that. And maybe it's a physiological thing, too, with old age. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I thought it was all about me and how I'd worked so hard on myself and how much of a better person. But apparently it just happens to everybody. And but it's just such good news, you know?
And, I mean, does humor help at all in the aging process? If you can take on a sense of humor about how life is changing and how you yourself is changing, does that play a role?
Well, you know, humor has helped me throughout my entire life, right?
Yeah.
So it's helping me through, you know, different challenges I've had. And humor is always, has like books. I mean, humor and books have dragged me through. And liquor for a while. But then liquor's not really a good friend, like humor and books. Sometimes you just have to get away from liquor sometimes. But it was good while it lasted. But
there's a party girl you get sick of.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're 40 and you're still like a big blonde party girl. It's like, humor, yes, of course. And I found, like, I grew up with two maiden aunts and an uncle. And so I grew up around old people all the time. And I found that that's why I played old women, because old women could say anything and would say anything, you know, like, how are the women home, Mike Tight? The sweet-faced, apple-faced woman with gray, white hair in Brooklyn honest to God, it was just like, gasp, you know. And and you could just say anything and be anything. And they seemed to have, you know, they seemed to have reached a place where they were all right with themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah.
I think it's people like old age in general. Like there's always been this history, like the grumpy old man, Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, that type of thing where.
Well, men are grumpy anyway.
Right.
So what's going to happen? No, I mean, I think it helps for both sides. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Always doing that.
No, what I mean is when I was growing up, I always was like, oh, he's an old guy or old woman or whatever. When I'm very young, obviously, like I'm talking about like a kid adolescence and just always being told, don't worry about them. They're old. They can be however they want. They can be as rude as they want. They have the license. And I always grew up thinking, no, this guy can be the biggest a-hole in the world, or this lady can be the biggest bee in the world, and I have no right to say anything. I always thought that.
Wow. And I think, I mean, I don't have exactly the same experience, but I think I have some of the same experience as you. Like that people, like, because remember, now, I mean, even I'm 66, so I'm right at the edge of that when everybody, I remember wanting to grow up, really wanting to get to be an adult, like listening to CBC Radio when I was 20, like, you know, Sunday morning, because I wanted to be an adult. Like, and people would, even in pictures of school pictures before me, just slightly before me, they all looked like they were 40. All the women looked like they were 40. All the guys, you know, we wanted to grow up because there was some sense that being grown up gave you some freedom and happiness, right. I guess, that you just didn't have. And now we kind of laud childhood and young. And I think that that's, we got the wrong end of the stick there. I think we were closer to it back in the old days, you know, when we thought, oh, yeah, I want to be a grown-up. I want to do all those grown-up things, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's a bit of a trend with people dyeing their hair more gray, like younger people dyeing their hair gray. And
mine is dyed, of course. You knew that.
Of course.
I don't have naturally gray hair because I'm not that old. But
I've had gray hair since I was in high school, so, I mean, that's fine.
Mike's talking about the hipster phenomenon. It's like generally they're considered hipsters, like young girls in their 20s is what you mean, Mike, going gray. It's very popular, and it was more so a couple of years ago, but I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, is this serious? Like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
So there's a change. There's definitely a change. Tragically, there's a change in the political world too, where we're moving more towards, you know, the right all over the world and embracing all those tribal things that we thought we'd gotten past. But there also seems to be good changes in the world too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you think, what's the balance? Are we going, is it getting better? Because old people always said, oh my God, when I was young, oh, things were so good. It was not like it was in my day. Yeah. You know, how many times did you hear that? And, oh, get up, and so you lazy good for nothing. When I was your age, I used to walk to school with no shoes on my feet. Oh, shut
uphill
up.
Uphill both ways. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, you know. But,
wait, Mary, that's a lie, right? People did walk to school with their shoes on, and they're lying.
Oh, you know, I'm not sure if Aunt Cass and them had shoes because Mom's father took off and went to New York and actually made $17 a day but didn't send anything home. And so they were really, Aunt Cass and Mom went into service when they were 15, 16 for no dollars, no money at all. They just went in for food and shelter.
Oh. Wow.
So they were really, things were really bad. Yeah.
All right. So people didn't have shoes. Okay.
Yeah. They may not have had shoes. I'm not sure. I've got an Aunt Cass. They're all dead now. There's nobody to ask.
it's an interesting balance, though, because like you said, people are maybe perhaps more accepting of people getting older, and it doesn't have those same negative connotations that it may have had, like you're out of touch because you're a certain age, what have you.
Right.
Don't trust anyone over 30 sort of stuff. But at the same time, I mean, when
and indigenous people are rising up again,
right? Absolutely.
Right? Don't you think? And we're opening up to the possibility that that you aren't stuck with being a man or a woman, that you could make a, you know what I mean? I'm not quite sure where that's going or anything. But you know, people seem to be open to it, and embracing it to a certain extent, right? And so that's all like freedoms we never even dreamt. That, you know, I mean, when you watch the homosexual movement from the time that I was a girl till now, you think, oh my God, if we want to change the world, we should just get these guys on it because look what they've done. Look what they've changed. You know, they've changed people on television. They're not just the weird gay friend. They're people who are gay on television, which, you know, you would never. Liberace. Who was not gay, by the way. So, you know, they managed
to... Very perceptive, Mary.
Who managed to change the world so quickly, right?
Yeah. That's, and, you know, when I was a teenager, Ellen having a kissing a woman on TV was a huge deal.
Huge, right?
And now it's, I mean...
Yeah.
It's just part of what we do.
Yeah, it's part of what we see. And, of course, the more we see, the more we know, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like... Sometimes I think of the mistakes I made as a parent, you know, and I think, well, you know, when I, as I knew better, I did better.
Yeah.
You know, like you just can't do what you don't know, can you? Yeah. You know? I often think my mother grew up in quite a savage kind of way. And so she wasn't warm or loving or anything. And she learned how to be warm and loving from watching daytime soap operas. Like she would never, you know, she would just shove you out the door when you were going away. And then I remember her hugging my brother Frank. And I thought, oh, this is weird, but I think she saw it on TV.
It's because she's watching Young and the Restless.
Was she doing it with, like, where she was, like, moving her head, like, tilting her head so she was...
Yeah. So she was in the light. Yeah.
So what is that greater acceptance or this maybe higher understanding of everyone? I don't want to say worth because that's the wrong word, but I mean, we're understanding that people have something to offer no matter what age and stage they are in life.
Right.
What does that mean for a performer who is in their 50s and their 60s and you know, beyond, especially as a woman, you know, for the roles that you get offered and the parts that you
Well,
can
you know,
on.
It's still basically a young person's game, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not, how many grandmothers are they going to have on? But I think it is opening up, and maybe it won't happen for me. But that, you know, like, I remember reading a novel. It was about someone's relationship with their father. And it was a great, great first novel. I think it was, it may have been Canadian, I'm not sure. But I thought, you know, I'm not that interested in this now. Because I'm gone on, like, my father is liquid in the ground now. And my relationship, you know what I mean? It's not as important to me anymore. I don't feel that anymore. I'm not, you know. And so... who's telling the stories that are important to me, right? That because we do now great books and stuff like that. They say that you can read them at any age and they'll mean something to you. But there just seems to be a dearth of stuff that would appeal to somebody my age or even somebody who's 50. Like what's on TV, like the news, I guess, and
Wheel of Fortune,
and Wheel of Fortune, yeah. And I'm not, you know, I hate Wheel of Fortune because I just don't. I want everybody to win. I just don't want people to lose. It makes me nervous. And so, but you know, what shows are we creating? You know, that are, you know, and of course, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answers. Obviously, if I did, I'd be, you know, buying out Netflix.
Yeah.
Or, you know, starting up Apple TV. Can you believe Apple TV now is taking over Netflix?
Yeah.
Netflix is going down, they said in the New York Times this morning.
Wow.
They implied that Netflix was going down. Not rapidly.
No, it's interesting, though, that you say that, because even we look at shows like The Kominsky Method, which it's aging, but it's always about... you know, I guess it kind of has to be about the struggles of aging, but it's never just like here's two people of that age doing normal things. It has to be about like, oh, they're struggling with their mortality or their.
But when you see things about young people, they're struggling. They're struggling with high school, or they're struggling with falling in love, or they're struggling with the job, or they're struggling with being a new mom. It that's what drama is, struggle, and also that's what comedy is. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean. Part of getting older is also trying new things and experimenting new things. And you wrote your first novel in 2017, right?
Yes, 2017.
You were 65 at the time?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, I wanted to write a novel. I wanted to be a novelist. I didn't necessarily want to write a novel, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
But I wanted to be a novelist.
You just
all
like
my
the idea.
Yeah, the writing life is very romantic, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And not the I wanted to have a published novel, like all the. Because the. Books that I read were meant so much to me, but I was always afraid to try because there's so many good books, so many brilliant books. But anyway, I ended up doing it, and I have to say, when HarperCollins sent me the first book, it was the most satisfaction I'd ever felt in my whole life, including sex, because you have to remember that I am an Irish Catholic person of a certain age, and so whenever I was having sex, it was a very crowded room with God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost all in there, not being that happy with what was going on.
Wait, so, where was Mother Mary and...
Oh, Our Lady wasn't actually there. No, Our Lady was, you know... floating and around, ascending around the ceiling. So, it was a very satisfying thing. Then, of course, you realize that you're not a novelist just because you wrote one book, because everybody, they say, has one book in them. So you have to write four or five to really be a novelist. So I'm working on my second one.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, it made a big difference to me because I would always been afraid to do it, afraid I couldn't do it. Like, it is a large body of work, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought I wasn't up to it and up to the task. I thought I'd just, you know, stop before. Like, I often stopped. Like, I wrote a novel with my cousin Mary. All the people in my family are called Mary, of course.
I was going to say.
Yeah, when I was seven, May Woodbury. We called it May Woodbury because May is a derivative of Mary, so we didn't want to go too far outside the family name. My mother's name, Mary. I have a brother, Kevin, my oldest brother, who took Mary in confirmation.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say I have a brother named Mary, too.
Yeah, he took Mary as a confirmation because he had such a dedication to Our Lady. But so we wrote, but we didn't finish it. You know what I mean? And you know how sometimes things stick like that when you're young? And I thought I'd never be able to, like I had all that want to do it, but I didn't know if I had the, like people said, did you always want to tell this story? I went, no. I didn't always, it wasn't so much the story I wanted to tell. I wanted to be a novelist.
Yeah.
You know, like magically be a novelist. But anyway, I have another story and so I'm working on it.
First one was called Crying for the Moon.
Yeah.
And I can tell you at Zoomer, I get so many novels written by our readers who have always wanted to write a novel, kind of like yourself, and they wrote it.
Yeah.
And then they're sending it to us to say, hey, take a look at what we did. So, I mean, I know that there's countless people out there who had the same feeling you did.
Yeah.
So what advice could you give to them if they're in their 60s or 70s or beyond and they want to write that novel or be a novelist?
I would say, go ahead, do it. What do you got to lose? After I did it, it all seemed, of course, it's all so simple once you do it.
Right.
And stop being afraid. And it isn't necessarily going to work, right? Everything's not going to work out, but do it anyway. Because even if you don't get it published or it isn't what you hoped it would be, at least you've done it and you have that sense. Like, you know, I'm not just sitting around with my thumb up my bum going, oh, I want to be a novelist. You wrote a novel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all those novelists who you love, they all sent them in, like Alice Munro sent her short stories in to 72 publishers or something before anybody, you know, said yes, you know.
And that's got the Nobel Prize.
Just go for it. Yeah. It's easy to say now that I've done it. It only took me 65 years. If you got another 65 years, just go for it.
Well, that's a good point. You don't have to think of it as the finished product sitting in a bookstore. You just have to think of it as the pile of pages on your desk that you finished telling the story, right?
Yeah,
Regardless of what happens to it.
And, you know, writing, I mean, and this is very New Agey and ridiculous, but writing is such a... release. I used to write sketches. Like, I remember I wrote this sketch about this little, you know, finding. Remember when you used to be finding your child within? And then I wrote this little sketch about this person who was finding their child within and then saying she couldn't find her. And, you know, she probably already drowned her with liquor. And then I thought it had nothing to do with me. And then years later, I thought, wow, I was really my unconscious mind was really wrestling with a problem that I had no idea was a problem until I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Read it or saw it years later.
Wow.
But I think it all was part of the process of letting that go, of coming to terms, even though I wasn't consciously coming to terms with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're working on another book. You're going to be on 22 Minutes. Everything we've talked about, the Canadian Screen Awards. You got Little Dog on CBC. And I also read that you're prepping a Cross Canada tour with Kathy Jones.
Yes. We've already done two 10-minute segments in Halifax last week.
Oh, wow.
And then we're going out to Vancouver the 10th of April. And then we're taking the train from Vancouver to Edmonton. And then we're coming from Edmonton to Toronto. And then that's it. I think there's six 10-minute segments that we're doing. And, like, it's like that thing, you know, my Aunt May had two friends, Murr and Agnes. And they'd had hard lives and brought up their children and everything. And then they got their old age pension, which was the first time they had any money of their own, and their Canada pension. And, oh, my Jesus, they were so happy. The two of them, they went to Ireland. They went off to Montreal. They did what they liked. And, like, kicked up their heels. They were so happy. So I always think of the Mrs. E's as like that, like that you have this freedom now and that we can finally be, you know, start to live our lives as we might have dreamt that we could. Right. And now we have the a way to do it, right?
And you and Kathy are playing characters?
Mrs. Enid and Mrs. Eulalia, who often walk in the park. That's, you know, they walk in the park and talk about different things that are on the news, usually, if it's on this hour's 22 minutes.
And now they get to travel across Canada.
Yeah.
So when everything is said and done and, you know, we're talking about radical aging and women getting more radical as they age, and what do you hope is the message that you're able to convey through your work about aging?
Well, you know, I had directed a film called Young Triffy's Been Made Away With, and it was the only film ever in the history of the Globe and Mail that they gave no stars to. And, you know,
true?
It was just like, it was a rank failure on every level. And I moved away from directing, and I wanted to direct again. And that was like maybe 2007 that I did that. And I wanted to start directing in television. And so my agent said, well, call your friends, you know, and see. And I just couldn't. And I thought I was so afraid that they would say, are you kidding me? You know, like, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, I did it. I just went ahead and did it. And then I got to direct a couple of things, web pieces for Little Dog. And, you know, I think I could have directed something at this hour, but this hour is always in transition, and maybe I'll get to do it next year. But I went ahead and asked. And that's a thing that I didn't know, that you're allowed to ask for what you want. You don't always get it, but it's not a humiliation to not get it, that you can ask for what you want.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a lesson that women learn, right? Because women are always trying to figure out what everybody else wants and take care of that. And so I finally feel like as you get older, you realize, well, I could ask for that. And then, and that's how I felt when I finally did it. I felt, well, what adds if they say no? I don't care. Like, and I actually said, I don't care if you say no, because I'm ready for that. But, you know, I just want to ask if I can do, you know, that.
But
it was good. It was a big step forward for me.
The best is like when, and I see this once in a while in media, on news, or like a news magazine show or segments where people bring on a guest who wrote a book. And it's usually like a self-help book for women, like how to ask for a raise, how
right.
to move up the ladder.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm just noticing more and more. It's like the way it's being asked, like women don't, like, hey guys, like look at the TV. Women don't know how to ask for things. You
oh,
know?
Come
and
on.
It's like,
but we are never taught to ask for things, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know.
We are taught to answer when other people ask for things and to take care of what. But it is funny, those self-help books. It's like, oh, we have to learn. It just seemed to me that I kind of naturally fell into it at a certain age.
It is.
Where I got tired of all the messages that I was carrying. Like, you don't have to carry those.
I know, right?
You know, but who knew that? You don't have to carry all the weight of what you learned or all the sadness of what happened to you or all the failure before. You can move on. You know, and who's to say no?
I know.
Right?
I know. Like, let's just, like, the next generation will get better and better, and they'll know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it's just the funniest thing where I'm like, it's just such an obvious thing that I cannot believe I did not know these things.
Oh, I was so afraid to ask for anything.
I know.
Like, the thought, I would always rehearse it in my mind with them laughing at me and saying, are you kidding me? And get out of this office. And, I mean, you know.
Yeah. You did well for someone who didn't ask for.
Yeah.
I know. I don't
created
see like
multiple
that, do
shows.
I?
And lifetime achievement. Imagine if you had asked.
I know. You'd have so much.
I know. I would be Apple taking over Netflix if I had a penis.
Well, that leads me to just very simple question. What goals do you still have in life, professional or otherwise?
Well, you know, my big goal is to get that book finished. But my other big goal is to get Hatching, Matching, and Dispatching back on the air. It only had 7 shows. All of us are anxious to do it again. We have a map. We have a map the way through. All we need is a broadcaster who will go ahead and do it, which, you know, it's not easy. You know, you can have a Lifetime Achievement Award and have a show that, you know, you created that's on the air for 27 years, and people will still just go, we'd love to be in the Mary Walsh business. And you go, well, that would be easy because just do this. But no. Where they're not interested in that. But you know what I mean? But I am learning to just say, this is what I want to do. I want to do that. I was so ashamed of wanting to do Hatching because it seemed like it was old. It had been on. You know, like when we do This Hour's 22 Minutes, we have to write a new show every week. And a sketch might not get in week one. And then you try to sell it in week two, but it already failed in week one, so it was almost impossible.
Right.
So that's the way I felt like. But I feel like, you know, I can just ask and we'll see how it goes, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know if this will be airing before the Canadian Screen Awards or just after.
Okay.
So either what do you think you'll be thinking when you're on stage collecting that lifetime achievement, or what were you thinking when you were on stage? Well, what do you think is going to be going through your mind when you're up there getting that award?
Well, you know, of course, I'm really going to be grateful. But what I'm thinking is, if I figure, here's what I want to get the hat trick, I'll get all three awards, because I'm figuring if Doug Ford could become premier of the great province of Ontario just because he said he wanted to, with no visible, you know, means of being that, why can't I get the, I'm an actor.
Yeah, you have the talent.
Why
have
can't
the talent.
I get it?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm doing that whole abundance secret thing. And so, yeah, I'm just saying, I'm going to get it. I'm definitely getting it, just like Doug Ford got the premiership.
So you heard it here first. Mary's running for office.
Premier Walsh, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being here today.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Again, congratulations on everything with the Canadian Screen Awards. However, it turns out.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
And we look forward to the next book, the next project, the web series that you've been doing with Kathy.
It's called Broad Appeal.
Broad Appeal, okay.
And it's there are already 6 2-minute bits that we shot last year or the year before. And we got 5 million, you know, shares or views or something on one, which is, you know, big. And you can see them on the CBC thing.
All right. Well, thank you again, Mary, so much. And, of course, Gina for the big elaborate
we'll
setup.
We'll do a wrap-up when we wish Mary.
Oh, we're going to wish
Mary. Yeah, sure. Mary, thanks for coming.
Thank you, you guys.
Hope
thank
you feel
you.
Better. So Mary just left us.
Yeah.
She was great.
Mary Walsh was one of the funniest guests I think we've ever had.
Yeah, she was wonderful.
She is awesome.
Mary and myself are both a little under the weather. And, you know, we both did our own set of cold drugs, cold medication.
But you guys nailed it.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. She likes we like different brands, so we had a little debate about that.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh. I won't plug them here because they're not paying us, Mike. You see, it's all about the cheddar. Yeah. And so speaking of that, we should tell everybody where they can find us, obviously on everythingzoomer.com and iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. If you find us on iTunes, please subscribe and write a review for us. That's how people would find us, okay? Because nobody knows where we are.
And we like to read nice things about ourselves.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, I'm assuming you write a nice review. If you don't want to have anything nice to say, just keep it to yourself.
Yeah, or you know what? Just walk away. You know, go hug someone.
Yeah, go walk away.
You know, that's what the world needs more hugs. And Mary Walsh. People like Mary Walsh. She was great.
Yeah, doing what you said. We're asking for these things. Like she said, you got to ask for things in life.
Well, you know how she was talking about being Irish Catholic and that's why sex was never that enjoyable for her, because so many people were in the room, all the saints, like God, Jesus, all the Holy Ghost and stuff. Irish Catholic, it's Roman Catholic. I'm surprised Mary didn't, like, for Mary, for me, has always been like, get out of here, Mary. Mother Mary, I'm talking about, not Mary Walsh.
Yeah, not Mary Walsh. Why is Mary
although,
Walsh
I will maybe start visiting
she
Mary
in the
Walsh.
House. The door's locked.
Yeah.
Yeah, our Italian Catholic upbringings and the Irish Catholic is very similar.
Yeah, for me, it's like definitely, it's like Jesu, Mother Mary, and Padre Pio. Like, they're Padre in the room Pio. With me. And I'm like, you guys get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can find us on those platforms. And Mike, say goodbye because... Because you're the one that's good at it, you know? I can't say goodbye.
Thank you so
much.
I'm
a rambler, Mike. I can't stop talking. Except when Mary's here. Sorry I wasn't on the mic too much because I was running a bunch of things. She was looking at me in shock because I was running a camera. I was running the recorder. I was moving back and forth. Mike did not leave me enough room between the wall.
Oh, my God.
And my recorder here. So I had to keep... Like, you know when you have to do that thing where you're going in between like a tight space and you have to like tuck your stomach in? Mike, I did that a lot. I really worked up a sweat today. Okay, well, thanks for joining us on Ages and Icons, everyone.
Yes, thank you, Mary, for being here. And we're rooting for you at the Canadian Screen Awards. Thanks, Gina. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next time on Ages and Icons.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.